Welcome to Ask an Innovator, where we interview senior executives about innovation. You can find us at askaninnovator.com or subscribe with your favorite podcast app. I'm your host, Josh Barker, CEO of City Innovation Labs. Welcome to Ask an Innovator. I'm here with Dan Smololo. He is the Director of Process and Innovation at the Walsh Group. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're going to talk about a little bit about the Walsh Group. I want to know a little bit about you first. And yeah, if you give some background, that'd be great.
Yeah, so been working for the Walsh Group for a little over 10 years, actively involved in the industry throughout my entire life. You know, I was that little kid that started playing with Legos, always loved the blocks, all the way through my college career of civil engineering, interned with a lot of companies that were building and always loved building. I thought it's one of the coolest things that we can go out and from nothing create these beautiful buildings that occupants can utilize, and they're just beautiful structures. They denote skylines. They change the way that we look at the world around us. And it's always been something that's excited me, as well as the complexity and the problems that come along with this industry. I always said if I didn't have a problem I needed to solve, I would be bored and I'd walk away and find something else. So definitely the complexity of the industry is something that excites me in this industry.
Nice. Awesome. And are you handy? Just to, you know, thought I'd throw that out there.
I am. I'm always looking for a project at home to work on, whether it's smart light bulbs or smart locks or building furniture. I'm always a DIYer. If it's something, oh, let's throw it away. I'm like, nah, I think I can fix that. I think we can give it a little sand, spiff it up a little bit, a little coat of paint, and it's going to be beautiful and perfect. So.
Good. Awesome. I'm not handy at all, but yeah. I do the smart stuff. You know, I'm into that. So yeah. That's good.
I think that's the future. It's all the fancy lights, the Hey Google, Hey Alexa, all that stuff. It's changing. And at the same time, all the people that were nervous about who's listening and who's watching.
Yes.
You got nothing to hide. I'm okay.
Yeah, so. Right. Exactly. Be one boring listen, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So. Well, if you could give the listeners just a little bit of background about the Walsh Group, that would be great too.
Okay. The Walsh Group, last year we celebrated our 120th anniversary. It started, it's a third generation right now. The Walsh family was Irish immigrants, started at the Columbia Exposition, the World's Fair, a small subcontractor. Back into the 1980s, we grew into a large couple million dollars a year. And over the last 20 to 30 years, we've really excelled and boomed both on the infrastructure water side and in the building side. Right now, we have about 3,000 plus employees. Anywhere from 8,000 to 20,000 laborers and foremen on the job sites, depending on our workload for the year. We primarily work on building side is commercial, residential, high-rise, Department of Defense facilities. And then on the infrastructure, we kind of dabble in a little bit of everything with the number one bridge builder right now, water, desalinization builder, a lot of flat works, roadways, airports. Don't really dabble too much on power and industrial such as oil and gas. But, you know, you name it, we've tried it. We're looking into it. We're doing assessments of it and how we can expand and move forward into the future.
So. Nice. All sorts of different construction projects.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good. So what about now? We talked a little bit about innovation and in the building industry. Mm-hmm. And I'd be really interested to see, since your title is Process and Innovation, Director of Process and Innovation, what does that mean? What does innovation mean to you and into the building world?
Yeah, so it's the building environment, the built environment right now is the negative connotation that we're an industry of we haven't improved, our processes are the same, they're antiquated, our production is low. And really the process and innovation is really honing in on, you know, what have we been doing? What have we been doing successful for years and years? How have we been doing it successfully and winning off those little successes and building from that? So you hear initiatives such as lean in the industry of, you know, cutting the fat out. Those are some great innovations that have come along the way, such as lean planning for scheduling, lean processes, all the way down to how technology has been adopted to utilize to do laser scanning and drones and photogrammetry. So the innovation is really driven by what can we take from what we've done and how can we move into the future to make us better, whether that's adoption of technology, whether that's adoption of new protocols and standards. It's really driving on at the core of understanding the industry and understanding us as the Walsh Group and how we can adjust and move towards the future.
And how is, you know, some of these new technologies, is most of your focus, would you say digital or analog or both? Is it a combination?
it's definitely a hybrid of both. At the end of the day, we have a very large equipment department, and I'm very excited about robotic equipments, but at the same time, that's going to pivot our industry to really understand robotics. You know, how do we get into that? For the longest time, we've been a construction industry, so how do we pivot to more of a tech Silicon Valley that has experience in construction? So how do we pivot into robotics and things like that, as well as how do we take those old analog methods, that paper and pencil, and refine them and improve on them, whether that's using simple things like touch screens on projects to having mobile technologies out in the field that we're not handling drawings and rolls of drawings and carrying out into the field. A lot of the technologies that are coming out right now are trying to help on that. There's kind of a swath of technology. Silicon Valley's seen this $17 trillion industry, and they're ready. They want a chunk of the change there. But it really starts with us. And you know, when we get that phone call of, hey, we have the greatest, latest technology, it really takes us and our responsibility to know that technology, understand it, and how we can use it. As well as a lot of the technologies that we utilize, we try and set ourselves up with the premier technologies in the industry. They've been around for a while. They understand the industry as well as we can understand and envision our future utilizing those technologies, whether it's open API protocols, somewhat open source, but at the same time, a lot of secure protocols, FIPS standards, FedRAMP compliance, things like that, because we do a lot of secure work on the DoD side. So we have to be very aware that we're not just building buildings or roads at the end of the day. We're securely building these facilities for an end owner that can operate, keep them safe, keep individuals safe, and keep their IP or their information safe along with those environments that we're building for them.
Sure. Now, would you say, you know, the construction industry is a pretty, obviously, a sleepy market, right? I mean, it's been around for years. I mean, years, right? Caveman days, people have been building things. So now there's, are we just starting to see some new innovations? Like, is this industry, it seems like there's some traction building and some buzz around innovation in the building sector. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I definitely say they're starting to wake up slowly but surely. Really where it kind of starts is on the owner's side. A lot of the technology isn't necessarily free. And one of the issues in the industry is the revenue stream and the profit we make is fairly small. You know, we discussed a little bit how a lot of other industries, they praise large profit numbers and huge profit numbers. We don't necessarily have that in construction. So we have to align ourselves accordingly to associate risk to any investment we undertake. So that goes hand in hand with technology. So you don't see a lot of companies that are just hand over fist investing millions upon millions of dollars. They're doing their due diligence to make these assessments. Along with that, the innovation starts to occur. You know, your BIM, building information modeling, is something that's been around for years. And even though it's been around for years, it's still not the common accepted transfer of product information or project information. So as that evolves, you know, we want to be on the forefront and understand how that's going to change and how that's going to change our built environment. So people are starting to pick up. At the same time, it's our due diligence as the Walsh Group to bring our subcontractors and our partners along for that ride. I remember being on projects and you'd give someone an Excel file and they'd ask you, what's Excel? You know, that's something where you're like, that's the common norm. What do you mean you don't know what Excel is? But that's the state of the industry. There are people that are leaps and ahead that are using VR and automated robotic drones and excavators. And then there's people that don't know what Excel and PDF are. They're getting on site. They're, you know, regular working people, getting their paycheck, and they deliver great products. So it's kind of that we're waking up, but we have to wake up in a smart and a effective manner and not just open our eyes and grab whatever's on the nightstand next to us and wing it.
Right.
So it's a very smart and curated endeavor.
Yeah, it seems like you have two far ends of the spectrum, right? People that are really lagging behind in these, like you said, Excel. Yep. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you might have these people come in, these technologists that are really like, oh, let's throw in these new tech type things. And that's a tricky tightrope to walk.
It truly is. You know, I would love to be able to go out tomorrow and build a building with robotics and this and that, and, you know, be all over newspapers and how cool it would be. But it's we're just not there yet, you know, as well as at the same time, we want to do it effectively because it's also an industry that employs a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there's a fear of robotics and automation are going to remove those jobs. Well, one of the things that kind of give us the warm and fuzzy is with automation and innovation creates new endeavors and creates new jobs. One of the ongoing jokes is, you know, down the line, there's going to need psychiatrists for those robots because they're overworked, underpaid, things like that. So how is construction, where are they going to move towards that in the future? So it's exciting time, and it's we truly want to bring everyone along on that ride. We don't want to just leave everyone on the wayside and, you know, say good luck, take care, and walk away from them. That's not our intent, especially in an industry right now where you're lacking skilled labor, you're lacking education on that front. So we want to be in that forefront to move everyone forward and push the industry towards a better future and a better tomorrow.
Can you give some examples, some tangible examples of maybe some projects you're working on that you can, some are covert, some you can't really talk about, but the ones you can that are kind of on either end of the spectrum, could you give some examples of like what those look like?
Yeah, I mean, there are some projects where we get out there, we roll up with our tool truck, break ground, do all the earth excavating, lay some utilities, and off we go. No technologies used. We do simple scheduling. We do simple pay application because at the end of the day, it's you don't have to have this crazy innovative process for that. That's that down and dirty, tried and true process of paper and pen on projects, and it works.
Right.
We can still do that. We can still build buildings that way. You look at the Empire State Building. You know, they didn't have all this technology to build it, but they still built it in a manner of, you know, months rather than years that some take some buildings today. But on the other spectrum, we have other projects where they're utilizing robotic assist demolition. They're utilizing drone photography to map out the buildings. They're utilizing LiDAR scanning to really create a digital twin that they do as built and create their models off of. So we can effective demolition, effective installation, and effective turnover to the owners. So, you know, it covers the spectrum. And a lot of our projects do that at the same time. It's some are on the cutting edge and some are tried and true analog paper and pencil, and that's okay. We're fine with that. Not everybody needs to be on the cutting edge because it's not necessary for that to happen. Until the industry changes and it becomes regulation that we have to be on the cutting edge and using all this crazy technology, well, that might change, but sometimes you got to ask why. You know, why would we need to do all this fancy stuff on a simple operation when we could get in, get it done, and deliver an excellent product for an owner and walk on and move over to the next project where we can help them along the way.
So we talked, you're touching on these technologies. What I'm curious too is how do you guys innovate? You know, where do these ideas come from? How do you iterate on them? How do you MVP them? I always, when I talk to people, I always say, you know, because I've talked to a couple people in the construction industry and they're like, you know, what's really hard is your MVP is one building. You get one shot normally, right? So it's like, how do you go and innovate in an environment that's very static?
Yeah, there's there's a couple companies out there that that they mentioned. The issue is they come up with these great standards, these great operational endeavors, and then they finish the project and it's successful. They made money, they delivered on time or even ahead of schedule. And then all of a sudden they go to the next project, they have to start from scratch. And that's kind of the nature of the industry we work in, whether it's going from building to building or owner to owner. Usually you see that issue. One owner might have very stringent requirements that you have to build this way, and another one might not have any and ask for floppy disks at the end of the day.
Right.
But that's kind of the nature of the industry. How we innovate here at Walsh is we have a very entrepreneurial mindset. A lot of people are self-starters. The organization kind of thrives on that. We give people the bandwidth and the ability to do things that they're excited about, you know, in a smart manner. We're not saying, you know, here's $100,000, go do what you want. You know, we give them a platform on their projects. We give trust to our employees that they're going to do what needs to be done at the end of the day to make us the builder of choice, which is in our mission statement. And also as well for the employee, an employer of choice. So we allow them to go out and trial some of these new technologies and look at these new technologies. As well, at the same time, we're very effective on it. We're not letting people just download whatever they want on their computer. We have strict protocols on understanding the pilots, understanding the risk associated with some of these technologies, as well as allowing them the bandwidth to utilize them at the end of the day in a safe and secure manner. And then from there, we somewhat grow them. So if it's an effective process, each one of our groups were broken into regional offices. So on the building side, we have National Building Group East and West. We have the higher education. We have hospitality. We have all different groups, especially on the water side too, desalinization, Arizona region. So a lot of them, to in a sense, is they're somewhat their own little entities or small companies. So you see this growth and innovation within each group. And then from there, we can start to drive lessons learned and understand, hey, you had this problem on this project or this new innovative process. This project across the United States and California is very similar. They're dealing with the same process. Let's share. Let's communicate back and forth. At the Walsh Group, we actually have a technology forum. So it's individuals across all 19 regional offices. They communicate, and that covers the water group, our transportation group, and our building group. And they share ideas. They share lessons learned. They share best practices, as well as it's a communication platform to ask questions. Hey, you know, I have this issue. Have you guys seen any inefficiencies or any improvements or innovations in these sectors that I can utilize? So we're very open. We're very transparent. We kind of breed on that culture of communication and lessons learned, and how we can build from that and iterate and move forward from that.
That's really cool. Now, question that goes beyond that, you said learnings. Are those coming from, you know, with working with different people, different owners of buildings? Is that where a lot of innovations are coming from? Are there things that people are asking, your customers are asking for, that you guys are going, wow, these are new things we've never done before? Or are they things that the customers have never seen before or dreamt of?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. We have a project right down the street here, and they were asking for just general photo documentation. So we went out there, we grabbed our fancy 360-degree camera, took a couple photos, showed it to the owner, and they were like, what? What is this technology? This is how it's like black magic to them. You know, they didn't understand it. And it's, you know, again, taking the owners along the ride and showcasing some of these new things that, you know, they're not focusing on. They're not thinking about it. They're not worrying about it because they need to build a building to get occupancy.
Right.
That's their focus. So it's owners that are somewhat savvy, but as well as sometimes owners that are on kind of, you know, the back nine that don't really understand how to use this technology yet. And we can bring them up with us to show them laser scanning, to show them something like 360 imagery. So it's kind of that give and take process. There's some owners that are out there that are like, hey, you got to use laser scanning. I want you to take drones and do thermal imaging of my envelope so I can see whether there's leakage or anything like that. So there are owners out there that exist. A lot of them you'll see on the healthcare side. Healthcare is really driving efficient and really future, not necessarily future proof, but forward thinking buildings. So when we're building a hospital and we get the MRI equipment in there, they're already thinking 5 years down the line when they have to replace that. How do we replace it? And how do we get this giant MRI equipment down the hallway?
Right.
So they're forward thinking, they're efficient. And that's where we're seeing it's kind of spanning out from there into other segments and getting them excited on that, as well as from the subcontractors. Some of the subcontractors are creating really connected ecosystems. For example, I think it was the Hamburger University that they just built down the street here. The subcontractor that actually installed the elevator systems in there are directly connected to the access control system. So when you go in there as a new employee or a trainee or whatever, just for a meeting, and you scan your badge, it tells you right there on the little kiosk, go to this elevator. You get in the elevator, it takes you directly to the floor and no other floors, and you're set. So you're starting to see these ecosystems kind of perpetuate from the top down and from the bottom up. It's that salesmanship kind of methodology from the subcontractors. Hey, we have this cool new thing. You want to try it out? As well as owners saying, you know, I heard about this and it made us more efficient on our buildings. Can you guys try it for us? And that's where it lines up with us, where that entrepreneurial mindship that, yes, we loved it. We've been waiting for an owner like you for the longest time to try this. And it's even actually changed us as an organization. You know, we're no longer just builders. We align ourselves as a construction service provider. And you're starting to see that in the industry that we don't just build buildings anymore. We provide a service. We provide a life cycle service from figuring out how you're going to build your building to building it, to owning it, and operating your building after the fact. So it's driving a lot of changes in the industry from a lot of different perspectives.
It's more than just building the building. It's more than the process. It's actually also the things that are being put in the building as well. Like we were talking at the beginning of the conversation, we're talking about smart, right? Do you guys do that as well, where you're installing different smart devices and smart things in the buildings?
Yeah, you're starting to see IoT kind of peek its head in there. So smart mechanical systems, how they tie into the lighting systems, down to smart glazing and storefronts. So when you're building a building and it's a south-facing building, they'll put in smart glazing that will actually dim the glass. You no longer use shades, so it can reflect the UV rays and things like that, so it can make your building cooler. Then it ties directly to the mechanical system to say, hey, you need to cool this portion of the building or these offices or these locations. So you're no longer messaging the operations staff that, hey, my office is too cold. You're building smart enough to know that, hey, I want my office a little bit warmer, a little bit colder based on my preferences. And a lot of the technologies are fairly interesting. So again, with the glazing one, not all the windows have to have glazing. They can actually do studies and assessments of the sunrise, sunset analysis and heating of the building and cooling of the building, that they can know, you know, really, we only need this on the top 30 floors based on shadows from other buildings and light studies and stuff like that they've done. So the technology actually going into the building is really improving the way that we live and work. You know, you're no longer getting the burnout. Off the top of my head, I can't forget what it was, but older buildings, when you would get, you know, basically sick in these older buildings because there wasn't enough light. The air conditioning was kind of stagnant air, and, you know, we're making these built environments a little bit more friendly. They're moving trees inside buildings, making you feel like you're outside. WeWork is an example where they're building these collaborative workspaces, and everybody can play nice in the sandbox and work together, and they're beautiful offices and coffee bars and this and that. As well as the technology that go into the building change how we work as individuals in them. So that goes back to the innovation conversation is, you know, we need to educate to learn these new technologies. We need to understand them. So when we're actually building the building, we install them correctly and efficiently so that not only are we smarter, but really at the end of the day, the buildings are smarter themselves that we turn over to the owners.
Now, what do you see in the next 5-10 years in building? I know 10 years is pretty far off, so next 3 to 5 maybe of what's kind of the future? What do you see?
So going back to these analysis and assessment, you know, you see things coming out like generative design, where you can have a million different variations of your building by just press of a button in a computer. So something that we're really seeing in the industry is, you know, big data. Not in terms of just like light studies and information on that front, but big data in terms of construction industries. You know, what are we doing? What are we doing wrong? What are we doing well? I remember hearing a podcast a long time ago, and it was Warren Buffett discussing that majority of the time he spends is reading. And he read a old Ford assessment, a business review of one of their most profitable years ever. And all he did was read that over and over again to understand why were they so profitable that year. So big data is going to drive us down that industry. It's going to drive the industry forward to understand, all right, what are we doing now that's going to make us better in the future? And how do we get there? What do we innovate? What do we improve on? Where do we focus? It's going to allow us to have these quick wins, but also big and effective wins in our industry. And it's also an industry where, you know, data is kind of king. Everything that we do are partnerships. We align ourselves with owners, developers, architects, subcontractors, and all we do is pass data. And it's very siloed data. The architects lives in their environment, and then they pass it to us, and it's almost like a breakup. Here's your data. Good luck. Sure. And then we pass it to the subcontractors that they have to do their own shop drawings and designs and things like that. And then again, there, it's a little, you know, almost like a breakup. And everyone's living in their own siloed realm. So the idea of the future is, if we can live in this environment with a common data exchange and common data environment where we're all working from the same sheet of paper, same data set. So when the architect makes a change, we see it live in our environment, and then the subcontractor sees it live in theirs. So we're no longer waiting weeks to get a revision or a change. And then all of a sudden that material shows up on site, but it was changed in the last revision, but it was already released. So data will help us to communicate and work more effectively. How do we get there and how do we align ourselves effectively? We're all talking about it. We're all looking at it. We know it's there. We need to just be friends. We need to trust each other. The industry is a little, everyone's got their kind of garden or a brick wall around their garden. You know, yeah. Everyone's doing these awesome and great things in their own little front yard and backyard, but they don't want to invite the neighbor over for a picnic. You know, they don't want to share that. Right. They want to, you know, hey, your dog peed on my lawn or something like that. So it's how do we open and share in an effective manner, allow you to work the way you work, allow me to way the work that I work. And, you know, we kind of have that keystone that translates everything, that we can really effectively move the industry forward. And I think data is going to be a big proponent of that. You know, whether you're using robotics, whether you're using drones or anything like that, it's all built on data. It's all built on information technology. So how do we get more efficient there is really going to drive us towards the future.
That's good. So as you're working in the building industry, what are some key things that you've learned that other people could apply to their own businesses as they're listening?
Acceptable failure.
Acceptable failure.
I would say acceptable failure is the biggest thing. One of the things, even back into college, I remember we had an instructor, Professor Miller, and you know, one of the hardest things that we had to learn was no might be the effective answer. Because at the end of the day, you can go through iteration after iteration after iteration, look at technology, look at improvements, and you're doing it good. You're doing it great. So realizing that learning and education and everything that we do at the end of the day, as long as we're doing it in a meaningful, impactful way, and at the end of the day, if we don't create something that's driving us along the path correctly, that's fine, because we still learn from it. It's acceptable failure. It didn't move us forward, but we learned that, hey, we're okay here. We're good. We're doing it right. Non-acceptable failure due to lack of information, reluctancy, that's unacceptable. And that's something that, again, here at Walsh with that entrepreneurial mindset, we've had some major wins. We've had some things that have been created where people have had patented, that they own these equipment now, down to some things that didn't work well, but we learned from it. You know, right. We took the risk. We associated time. We associated money to it. We knew that there was a associated risk to that topic, and we learned from it. And knowing now from moving into the future, you know, we're not ready for it yet. I'll give you an example. You know, the whole VR AR conversation. We actively use that right now. It's a cool tool in the industry. Do we have it on every project? No. Have we used it on some projects? Yes. We're not diving headfirst into AR and VR because we see it as kind of a niche, and it's a great niche, and it's something that can really move us forward, but we're not putting all of our eggs in that one basket, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. We're coherent and we're aware of it. So in terms of that, it's somewhat of an accepted failure because we know that down the line, we're going to be on board. We're going to be there, but the industry's not there yet. So kind of putting it on the back burner. We're going to let it simmer a little bit. So I would say that's probably the number one thing that I can say, accepted failure. And really at the end of the day is risk. You know, everything that we do is there's a risk associated with it. So knowing the risk, sometimes not diving headfirst is the correct answer as well. Because we want to associate risk. The industry of construction, as I mentioned earlier, that typical projects make about 3% profit. And if you're going out there and you're diving headfirst, that 3% can get eaten up in a blink of an eye. So associated risk into the things that we do and understanding what we do is very important to us, as well as who we align with both on the building side and the technology side. We associate risk, and really at the end of the day, a reward for both parties if we decide to move forward with those entities.
So I would imagine in the building industry, is it true that you think as an industry overall, it's a lot more risk averse because of the fact that, I mean, you're building a building. I mean, I'm in the digital space. My background's digital. I can throw up a prototype and I didn't spend that much time, but for you guys to prototype a building, I mean, I'm certain there's obviously ways to do that with AR, VR, that sort of thing. But I'd imagine historically, would you say that causes a little bit more risk averseness?
It does. For the longest time, designers lived in a 2D world. you know, drafting pen and paper on a flat space. The industry is starting to change where people are starting to design now in a 3D environment. So we're able to do conceptual stuff. We're able to do rendering, something like that, in that environment. Not everyone's there yet. So we can start to prototype. Like I mentioned, AR and VR, you can start to put buildings in these environments where you can see them live out there. But there's not enough massive impact in the industry to really move that forward right now. That's not to say next year might have somebody figured out a solution to do it down, dirty, and quick so we could get it out there. But right now, the proof of concept, you know, we're not going to go out Walsh and just build a building to build a building.
Right.
Because there's a risk associated to it. There's a cost associated to it. For example, you can walk three blocks down the street here. We're on Sangamon and Jackson, and there is a building. It's probably about 40, 50-story building that's vacant. Developer came in, thought it was a good concept, built it, and it's vacant. So that's the industry that we live in. We're all thoughts, we're ideas, but it's all a risk. It's all a risk assessment. It's evaluating risk, and not only risk for cost, but risk for quality, you know, where we're building, how we're building it, and a risk to safety. Because every day we're the only industry really where you step out onto a job site every day, and if you're not doing your job correctly, you might not go home. So risk is something that we have to deal with, and we want to make sure we are the best at associating risk and mitigating that risk. So we're both safe, we're quality, and at the end of the day, you know, we're profitable. Because, you know, if we're not making a profit, you can't really do anything tomorrow that you're doing today.
Right. Well, that's a, you know, I think the last point you made of acceptable risk is a big one to apply, because I think that's just so important in innovation, right? Being able to take risks, make them, because that's the only thing that's going to really push us forward, the acceptable risks.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's some good advice. I really appreciate your time, Dan. It's been an awesome interview.
Yeah, it was great. Great conversing with you. I was excited.
Yeah.
Excited to see what comes out of it. So.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to Ask an Innovator. Visit us on our website, www.askaninnovator.com. This podcast has been sponsored by City Innovation Labs.